Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my long-lost co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Susan. It's good to be back. I was battling a virus for 3 weeks. And I did listen at home on the farm, and you were doing great things. Susan, thank you for all your help and all the wonderful things you did. But I'm sure there will be guests coming up today that we're all going to enjoy speaking with. But I know you have some breaking news for our Ames people.
Yes, we had a runoff for the 4th Ward City Council between incumbent Chris Nelson, seeking his third term, and 20-year-old ISU student Rachel Junk, who, if elected, would be the youngest woman to win elective office in Iowa's history. The runoff even made the front page of Des Moines Register with the headline, "The Battle of the Ages," because of the youth of Rachel Junk.
Well, so what happened? Give us a flash. Is history being made here?
We made history. Rachel Junk won with 712 votes, 54.77%. And Chris Nelson got 587 votes, or 45% of the vote. There were 1,300 ballots cast.
Well, all right. That was yesterday in Ames. And today it's time to welcome our first guest, Henry Corbin. Hello, Henry.
Hello.
Now, for listeners who don't know you, why don't you introduce yourself today?
Yes. So I'm the new executive director of Main Street Nevada. Nevada has just joined the Main Street Iowa community, which Ames has been a part of for, I believe, around 10 years now. And we're excited to be a part of the program. But I am our new director. I've been on the job for about 5 weeks now. So I'm still just getting out of that preliminary phase. But it's a great group of people.
Well, welcome aboard. I'm from Story City. We've been with Main Street for a long time, and it's a great program, all kinds of great resources available and guidance, and they have real guidelines and helpful suggestions about what to do and what not to do. It's mm-hmm. like you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Oh, absolutely.
But you also have an ongoing relationship with KHOI. Tell us how you got involved here.
Yes, so I am a former KHOI intern. So back when I was going through DMAC, I was looking for an internship and came into KHOI just by chance and ended up having an internship here. And it was one of the greatest experiences. I learned an immense amount of material. I met all sorts of people from different walks of life. Covered stories that I wouldn't have covered. And then also it kind of helped introduce me a little bit to my next job there. And then that helped me get to this point too. I had just a wonderful experience here, learned so much, had so much fun. That was the other part. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Well, KHOI is a fun place. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here at 7 o'clock in the morning or any other time. Now, what we really have here at KHOI is a unique resource for the community because, number one, we have people here who've come in to produce their own shows, and they've been here a long time. Paul here, Paul Hertz, is our engineer. I think, Paul, you do 3 shows, I think, so he's a very important person here, classical music and all kinds of music that he brings in. And this station is unique in that you can hear every form of music you can imagine, from opera to rap. And, you know, I'm an old radio guy, and in the old days, every station had its format. You were all country and western, you were all classical, you were all rock, you know. And here at KHOI, it's a potpourri, all kinds of music, and more importantly, in many ways, a lot of inroads into the community. If you want to know what's going on with the city council or the school board or local elections or issues, KHOI is where people come in to talk about those things. This summer, Dennis Hart, had a lot of people in who had never been to KHOI, various leaders in the community, and we just had wonderful relationships develop, and the material they brought in, I think, was urgent for the people of Ames to hear about and know about, and I feel good about that because I think we're the only station in the area that does that kind of exposure to not only the city of Ames, but of course Susan and I have spent a lot of time with neighboring communities such as yours, you know, And, it's been fun, hasn't it, Susan? We had road trips and
community
theaters and festivals. And
it has been fun. And when Henry was an intern, we had a lot of fun in Nevada. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to do more on a regular basis with Nevada now that you're executive director of the Main Street Nevada.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's something that we as Main Street Nevada look forward to creating stronger partnerships and networking and working with these groups in the communities. And so we're looking at we are not currently a member of KHOI, but we are looking to become a member and to continue and to support because we endorse and support all these great things that you're doing and enjoy all the material that you bring forward. And we hope to be able to share the material and events that we're putting on in Nevada and share the fun stuff that will be going on there.
Well, that's part of our mission. And that's one of the reasons, besides that we wanted to welcome you, that you're here, because I think there's a weekend coming up that we would normally be promoting. But now you can tell us what's going on.
Yeah. So we've got our Vintage Christmas Weekend, and it is this Friday and Saturday, the 6th and 7th of December. We're putting on all sorts of events. It's going to be a fun time. So Friday night, we've got our famous cookie walk, which I've found out is a much bigger event than I expected it would be. We are looking to get around 150 dozen cookies donated to have for this walk and fundraiser. Which it'll be a good time. You can come and purchase a box and get a dozen cookies, and it'll be held at the United Methodist Church at 5:30. That's just a fun event. I've gone to it before, enjoyed it. It's just kind of a fun place to see the cookies, and we'll be having a contest for best holiday cookie. But also then, at 6 o'clock, Santa is coming to Main Street, Nevada, and we're going to have a tree lighting, and it's just going to be a great, enjoyable time. He'll be coming along. We haven't quite figured out how he's going to arrive yet. We're still working on that. So stay tuned. There'll be something fun. We'll make sure of that. But then at 7 o'clock, the Talent Factory, the theater in Nevada, is showing Polar Express. And it'll be a fun experience. All the kids downtown, we have huge turnouts to our events. For Halloween, we had around 1,200 people come to our trick-or-treat downtown, and we were amazed by that. Then Saturday, we have a cookie decorating and crafts with Santa, and that's downtown, too, from 9 to 1. And all this information can be found on our Facebook page, Main Street, Nevada, Iowa, that we also do our history posts, our weekly newsletter, and just kind of fun things that we're doing throughout the community. But we also have our firefighters are doing a chili cookout Saturday night, so we're hoping the weather cooperates. We don't want to freeze them all. We don't want it to be that type of chili. But we'll be doing that. We have Etsy pop-up shops going on throughout the day, so that'll be a fun event. And then Santa's coming back on Saturday, and he'll be visiting with all the children downtown. And then Sunday, we have the holiday home tour, and that takes place throughout the community, several historic homes. It's from 2 to 5, and it'll be a fun event. These homeowners decorate their homes to look like they're almost out of a magazine for Christmas.
Yeah, so we have that story study also. And they have themes. You know, each home has a theme, like a colonial Christmas or this other theme, you know, so that the decor they have and the decorations they put up always have some sort of a theme. And that's fun because just fun to go into someone's house and see all the things they do for Christmas. And it gives you ideas about what you might do in your home, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's fun to do. And up there in Story City, and probably there too, you put on these boots, you know, over your real shoes so you don't track in. And you walk into their homes, and you're hosted there by that couple or that family. And it's really a nice, intimate experience. Now, are there open houses with the business community, too, downtown?
Yes. So we'll be having an open house for This Day Photography. They're a studio that was over here on Main Street, Ames. They moved to Nevada and Paula and Mike, who are the two individuals who are hosting this, have just dove into our community and have just dove into the Nevada way of life, I guess. They're fun individuals on our board, and I would like to thank my board right now just because they're a great group of people, and none of this would be possible without them. It's amazing what they can put together, and just in a fun and creative way.
So it's going to be Christmas in Nevada, and it'll be memorable and wonderful, and the first Christmas, really, under the Main Street program, isn't it?
Yes, yep.
So basically you're talking about your inaugural Christmas under Main Street, and I think that, it's wonderful in every community, and Nevada is going to be as good or better than most, it sounds to me like.
Well, you've got
a lot of things going on. I'd suggest Santa come in on a fire truck.
We're hoping that that's the case. They've been doing a little bit of maintenance, so we're hoping it'll all be up and running.
And then I've seen Santa Claus come in on a motorcycle, too, which can be a little threatening, but it's just fun to have Santa come and the kids. I like the activities for the kids, too, especially the hands-on activities, the things that are especially for them. And really, what I really like is that the Talent Factory is showing Polar Express, the great animated feature with Tom Hanks. And it's so timely and so Christmassy, and while the kids are occupied, while the adults are spending money downtown.
Absolutely.
Right? So,
and he just told me that there weren't any tickets sold, but all his tickets are booked for that showing, and it's around 400. So
yeah.
We'll have a full house and fun
time.
Yeah,
that's Larry Sloan, right? Manager of the... We cover that fairly often because they'll often have a show we want to cover.
He brings great, just fun material and just great shows. So we're hoping he'll put on quite the fun experience, and it sounds like he will be. So I look forward to kind of seeing that. So,
well, Henry Corbin, the man in charge of Main Street Nevada, congratulations on your new position. And Nevada is a going community and a growing community, and now there'll be some method to your madness, and you'll grow the Main Street way. And I'm glad to hear you have a good board, too.
That's an amazing board.
That's very important. So Henry and everybody in Nevada invites you to spend this weekend in Nevada with all the varied activities he described. And, man, who wouldn't want to be in Nevada this weekend, right, Henry?
I hope everyone comes.
Well, good luck, and we might talk to you later about how this thing came off, okay?
Will do. Thank you.
Henry Corbin with Main Street in Nevada.
There's no place like home for the holidays. For no matter how far away you roam, when you long for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can't beat home, sweet home. I met a man who lives in Tennessee, Pennsylvania, and some homemade pumpkin pie. From Pennsylvania, folks are traveling down to Dixie's sunny shore. From Atlantic to Pacific, gee, the traffic is terrific. Oh, there's no place like home for the holidays, 'cause no matter how far away you roam, be happy in a million ways. For the holidays, you can't be home, sweet home.
I met a man who lives in Tennessee, and he was heading for Pennsylvania and some homemade pumpkin pie.
From Pennsylvania.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Paul Wearson and I are your hosts for this hour. We've just been talking with Henry Corbin, new executive director of Main Street Nevada, telling us what's coming up this weekend in our county seat. Nevada is one of the towns partnered with the Food Bank of Iowa, a worthy organization that will be featured in our next segment with Stoney Camp, executive director of the Story County Community Foundation. who will be talking with one of the recipients of this year's foundation grants. Welcome, Sunny.
Thank you for having me again. Glad to be back.
Would you introduce your guest? I believe she's ready to talk with us.
Sure. This morning we have Emma Christensen with the Food Bank of Iowa joining us this morning. Hello, Emma. Happy Wednesday to you. Emma, if you can just start by telling our listeners this morning a little bit more about the Food Bank of Iowa and your role with the organization.
I'd be happy to. So the Food Bank of Iowa, our mission is to provide food for Iowa children, families, and seniors to lead full and active lives and strengthen the communities in which they live. We work with 55 counties throughout the state of Iowa, from the Minnesota border down to the Missouri border and all the way over even to the Illinois border. Kind of the shape of Louisiana is our map of counties that we serve. If you can picture that in the state of Iowa, it's kind of a funny looking map. But we work with about 625 partner agencies throughout our 55 counties to distribute 1.5 million pounds of food each month to our counties. Now that's collectively, not individually. We're a part of Feeding America, which is a national organization, and really working to get food out to the people who need it.
Sounds like you guys are doing a lot of great work, and I think it'd be fair to say that most of our listeners, or many of our listeners, are familiar with the organization and the great work that you do, and I'm sure that you've touched many lives, whether it's directly or indirectly, of our listeners. And I, for one, have been fortunate enough to be involved and engaged with the Food Bank of Iowa in a variety of capacities since I was a young child, whether it was just through school or volunteering or donating or contributing to your programs in some capacity.
Well, you know, that's really great. And the great thing about our organization is, you know, the breadth of programs and way that we serve people. You know, we have traditional pantries that we work with, you know, maybe a church basement or at a community center. But we also work with schools. We work with homeless shelters, halfway houses, other, you know, community services. We give food to community meal sites, daycare. We have such a variety of different partners. And then we have programs ourselves. You mentioned, you know, working with the schools. We have school-based pantries, which we'll talk about more. And we also have the backpack program, which many people are often familiar with. And it's the program that gets sacks of food to children over the weekend so they have something to eat when they go home. We also have mobile pantries, and this is really a good program for a lot of our rural communities and in our communities that maybe don't have the resources to have a full-time pantry or permanent pantry at their in their county. We can almost create a pop-up shop of a pantry, and we have it send a truckload of food. We work with a site to set it up to get food up there. So we work really hard to make sure we can get food to everybody who needs it.
Emma, we'll talk a little bit more about that and how it relates to the grant that we provided you in just a moment here. But I'm wondering if you can talk more about the communities that you serve in Story County. It sounds like you do serve most of our communities, but from a broad perspective, just about all of the programming and the work that you're doing. And I know you've touched on it just in your last response. So just any other details that you can provide about the specific work that you're doing here in Story County from a school partnership perspective, the backpack program perspective, any of the outreach programs that you have to offer, or even any of the community partnerships that you have in our communities in Story County.
We serve a lot of communities in Story County, from Ames, Ballard, Collins Maxwell, Nevada, Colonesco, and Roland Story schools. We have school pantries in all of those communities. So we have such great partnerships in Story County. We also do have the backpack program in many of our Story County schools. And we have to give a big shout out to United Way of Story County for their support for that program. You know, I was looking at the numbers this morning, and there's about 80,000 or 89,000 people in Story County, and there's over 14,000 people in Story County who are food insecure, which is about 1 in 11 people, and it's you know, kind of staggering. It's kind of, you know, you don't really see food insecurity, but it's there. So our programs, they're meant to help those people who maybe are struggling and you don't notice. So our partnerships with the schools and the community organizations are vital to help those people.
I think it's also important to remember, Emma, as you've touched on a little bit, about how when you're thinking about that 1 in 11 individuals who are in a situation or a circumstance where they are dealing with food insecurity, it's something that we may not be aware of ever. And even more so, it's something that they may not come forward on their own to talk about or to express needing help with. So the value of supporting your organization, whether it's through volunteering, donating something to a food pantry or a backpack program, or really serving as an advocate in those schools, is so important.
Yeah, it really is. And those are really great ways that people can help, you know, the food bank or their local communities, is making a gift, and not just a financial gift, but donating food, finding out what items a food bank or a food pantry need, and, you know, when is a good time to donate. You know, the holidays are a great time to donate, but we also need a lot of food in the summertime, too, to get out to people. So hunger does not discriminate against the time of year, that's for sure. We're always, you know, encouraging people to locally find out what your community needs. You know, any of these, if, you know, listeners are wanting to know how they can help, contact the schools in their community. Find out what can they do to help that school pantry. Is it donate food? Do they need volunteers? Each community is going to be different, and highly encourage people to always call before they drop off food. Sometimes that can be overwhelming to get a lot of food at your doorstep. So always finding out directly from them, what are their needs?
Emma, I think it's also important to remember to always keep the Food Bank of Iowa or your local food pantries at top of mind. I think we're in a time now where the sense of purging or, you know, keeping a lighter load in our lives is something that at least I can relate to. And I know that that's common among individuals in my age group or generation. What can you offer as far as advice or guidance to individuals who may be cleaning out their pantry or their cupboard shelves, or even a business who may have a community event and may end up with a surplus of extra food? I know I've been involved with organizations or community events where there's been extra food, and I always try to keep atop of mind the local organizations here that can benefit from that. But what are just some important things to keep in mind as people are thinking through those processes or opportunities to take what they have, or take that extra food, or take that food from their pantry and give it to somebody else in need versus just throwing it away?
You betcha. So, you know, when cleaning out your pantry and you come across items that you don't need anymore, just always ask yourself this question: would I eat this, or could I? You know, if certain things are okay past the expiration date, can't say what foods, and you have to, you know, each food is going to be different, but you know, if it is way expired and you yourself wouldn't eat it, I'd suggest not giving it. The food is going to real humans, obviously. So it could be going to, you know, your neighbor or the person who at the gas station, you know, that where you get your gas in the morning. So think about that human element. But, you know, we have a lot of volunteers who sort food. So if you aren't sure,
they're there to help.
Things that are really always in need at food banks, but food pantries too, and places that are distributing the food directly to the people. Things of high protein are great. So canned meat, peanut butter, hearty stews, non-perishable items, those are always so valuable. And especially, you know, when doing a food drive or if you're going to the grocery store and want to pick up a few extra items for your local food pantry or the food bank. Those are some great ones, and we have a list of that on our website. And, you know, if you have leftover food from an event, that's a great opportunity to connect with a local organization. Always call ahead first if you think you might have some extra food, and you'll work with them to figure out, you know, what their needs are and if that's something that they can accept.
The Story County Community Foundation is proud to have provided a community grant to the Food Bank of Iowa for the Feeding Story County project. I know you've talked a little bit about this from a broad perspective, but can you share more about the specific project and initiative and how it relates to the Food Bank of Iowa's overall mission and work.
Yes. Well, you know, first of all, thank you so much for the support of our school-based pantries in Story County. That grant is going to help us feed a lot of people and distribute over 25,000 pounds of food just through our school-based pantries. So a little more about what our school pantries actually do, overall is provide readily accessible food assistance to low-income students and families. It's really convenient for families because the pantries are at the schools, and oftentimes they're maybe already picking up their kids from school or at the school, so then they don't have to make multiple stops. You know, they don't have to try to get to the grocery store to use their SNAP or get across town to their local pantry. It makes it much more convenient our busy lives. You know, I feel like this day and age, everyone is busy and there's never enough time. So we're trying to make it easier for those families. How we help make the school pantries possible is partnering with or identifying a partner at the school to start a pantry. And we help provide the resources to the schools. So all the schools have to do is provide the space and oversee the distribution. And then we help provide the product and the structure and the oversight, and even the equipment. And we'll help provide the shelving and work to make sure we can get a fridge and get them on their feet. And then, you know, provide assistance while the pantry is operating. There's always going to be questions or how do I do this? How do I do that? You know, operating pantries or working with partners is our expertise. So we have a lot of knowledge within our staff to help make sure pantries are running smoothly. So, short term, the school-based pantries, you know, ease the discomfort of hunger. You know, people are hungry. Being able to pick up a few items is going to ease that discomfort. Our midterm and long-term goals, you know, is to provide better, consistent nourishment for children so they can be healthier and more active and learn more and learn better while in class. And long-term, we really want to help individuals achieve their potential and earn a living wage. If we can reduce the effects of poverty and increase the contributions of talents of community members, the community is going to thrive. So, you know, it all starts with a simple, basic need of food.
Well, it sounds like you really do provide a great platform for anybody to get started with this, whether it's from the resources and supplies to overall support through the whole process. So it really is an easy way to get engaged with your community and provide that direct level of support. Emma, can you talk more about what you're most proud of with the work that you do on behalf of the Food Bank of Iowa?
Really proud of a lot of work that we do, but what pulls at my heartstrings and makes my heart just warm is getting that basic need to the people of my state. You know, I'm a lifelong Iowan. I come from rural North Central Iowa. So knowing that the Food Bank of Iowa helps people not only in my hometown and the community where I live now and just the, you know, our 55 counties from rural to urban, that's what makes me proud. And I always get goosebumps, too, when I tell people how much food we distribute every month. Currently, we're distributing about 1.5 million pounds of food each month.
Wow.
And it's just hard to fathom and hard to picture, but you know, I see our staff working hard day in, day out. That's what makes me proud.
Well, thank you for sharing. Emma, while philanthropy can be explained in many different ways, at the Story County Community Foundation, we often explain it as giving of one's time, talent, or treasures to their community. What is one thing that listeners can do to support the Food Bank of Iowa through their time, talents, and or treasures?
Get involved. We've got a lot of opportunities to volunteer, to attend events, even donate, whether that's food or your dollars, and then even tell people about the Food Bank of Iowa and food insecurity. Share what you learned. Share what we do. You know, share that there's 1 in 11 people in Story County who are food insecure. Start talking about these issues. The more people know, the more people can help.
Wonderful. Sounds like there's a lot of great ways to be an advocate for the organization that don't take a lot of time or extra effort. Emma, can you, as we're closing out this today, can you share more about your website and just ways that listeners can connect directly with the Food Bank of Iowa?
People can visit our website at foodbankiowa.org. Right now, we have a special campaign running, our Hunger Free Holiday campaign, where we're working to provide more food and more meals to hungry Iowans this holiday season, because we believe no one should be hungry for the holidays. So there's a place to donate if people would like to that campaign specifically. At this point, we've raised enough for over 21,000 meals. So we want to see that grow. So helping there. But also take some time to explore the website. Get to know how we help. We've got a lot of great information about food insecurity, how we feed Iowans, about our agency programs and partners. So you can learn a lot. You can spend a lot of time on our website.
So whether at your website, which again is foodbankofiowa.org?
Foodbankiowa.org.
Thank you. Foodbankiowa.org. I know you're also on social media as well, and I know individuals can always stop out at your location in Des Moines as well. So, Emma, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the great work that you're doing on behalf of the Food Bank of Iowa and to serve our communities throughout our state and even more specifically here in Story County. Thank you again. And as everyone is getting ready for their holiday plans, we encourage you to take an extra moment to think about how you can serve your communities and how you can give back in a big or small way to support the Food Bank of Iowa and their partner organizations in Story County. Thank you, Emma.
Yes, thanks, Sunny.
Thank you, Sunny Camp, for coming in and talking with Emma Christensen to let our listeners know about the important work of Food Bank of Iowa.
Thank you. We are excited to be here, and we'll look forward to joining you guys again. Yet this week, we'll be chatting with Jennifer Ellis with Friendship Arc Homes.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of grants out there from Story County Community Foundation, and it's a really good idea to let people know what you're doing.
Yes, we are excited about this partnership and look forward to every opportunity that we have to elevate the great work that our nonprofit organizations are doing in Ames and throughout Story County.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. The music you just heard provides an introduction to Stories and Pictures, Central Iowa Symphony's December 7th concert. The first half of that concert consists of Nathan Stuckey's musical Whodunit, The Composer is Dead, with text by Lemony Snicket, as narrated by Patrick Dieterman. The second half is Pictures at an Exhibition, the well-loved orchestral piece by Mussorgsky, as orchestrated by Ravel, which is what you have just been listening to. We'll start our preview as we hear from Central Iowa Symphony's conductor and director, Eric McIntyre, telling us why he paired these two pieces to delight an audience of all ages. Once again, you have a very intriguing program set for the Central Iowa Symphony. How did you decide on these two selections?
There were two pieces that I wanted to do and thought would be good for the orchestra, and I originally had not thought of them together, but once I started building the program, I realized they would be a really good match. For one, Pictures at an Exhibition is a real warhorse of the literature. It shows off the orchestra. It's a good challenge for the orchestra. It's an audience favorite, and everybody has something important to do in that work. So it's something that has been on the horizon, and it seemed like a good time to do it this year. And then matching it with The Composer is Dead, I really thought of that late because, well, The Composer is Dead is something I've been wanting to do because it's a lot of fun. It's a new piece that in the tradition of Peter and the Wolf and Young Person Guides to the Orchestra, it introduces people to the members of the orchestra, or maybe beyond introducing them, just talks about the instruments in the orchestra in that delightfully cynical way that only Lemony Snicket can. And so a piece that's dealing with the instruments of the orchestra and their characters is really perfectly matched with Pictures at an Exhibition, which is viewed as one of the greatest demonstrations of orchestrational prowess in the literature. Maurice Ravel took that work originally for piano by Modest Mussorgsky and scored it for orchestra. Many people have done it before, and others have since, but Ravel's is considered the real masterpiece because of the way he uses all those instruments and combinations to create this absolutely fantastic panorama of orchestral sounds. It's a whodunit to find out who killed the composer, and it turns out a lot of people are involved, and there's a lot of composers involved as well. But otherwise, it's the main pairing for the program is because it's a piece that talks about the orchestra and its characteristics and the various characters in the orchestra, and it's paired with a piece that is shows that off in its most magnificent form.
Well, this should be a particular concert that would appeal to children.
It should, and it should because, again, it's got a story, and it's a funny story, and it's one that's got a lot of humor to it. And it's educational. It shows the orchestra. But it also is a concert that's really appealing to anyone. There's enough sort of even highbrow humor in there for people who know the orchestra. There's play on stereotypes of the musicians who might play each instrument and inside jokes for musicians as much as there is something that's appealing to anybody. So it's got stories and pictures, as I say, for children, but really anybody.
Some of the descriptions that I've seen of it make it sound as if you move around the orchestra in search of the murderer?
In fact, the premise of the story is that an inspector has claimed that the composer is dead. And bit by bit, the inspector given by the narrator, the story told by the narrator who's performed by Patrick Dederman, goes through and discusses who all the culprits might be, who is all under suspicion, and describes members of the orchestra and instruments in the orchestra, and there's music by each of those. So it's presented as a whodunit, and we go through all the usual suspects in an orchestra.
And, of course, it's solved, right?
Essentially, yes, but I don't want to give away the ending. We do find out what happens, or at least we're left with a resolution, I should say.
Well, are there any musical parts of this orchestra that the audience should know about that are a little bit not obvious right away?
I think for the most part, it's a standard orchestra. I mean, the instrumentation, that is, the instruments that are used for the work, both pieces are standard, although the Ravel orchestra is very large. It uses the full complement of symphonic instruments, plus the unusual addition of the celesta, which is that instrument we know best from the Sugar Plum Fairy and the Nutcracker. It's orchestra bells that are played with a keyboard. And then the even more rare edition in Pictures at an Exhibition of the saxophone, which was used quite a bit by French composers of that era of the early 20th century. And Ravel uses it very famously in this in a big solo in one of the movies.
Well, this must be a lot of fun for the orchestra.
It is a lot of fun. It is definitely a lot of fun to play and to work on. It's also a remarkable challenge because a lot of people would know that Pictures at an Exhibition is a very virtuosic work for all of the players, but The Composer Is Dead is equally virtuosic, so we have two big pieces on the program, and both of them are a challenge for everybody. Nobody's allowed to let their guard down through either piece.
Well, this certainly sounds like something that anybody who's listening will not want to miss.
I agree with that. This is a concert that is should have something for everyone, and hopefully everything for everyone. That there's never a dull moment in this. This is all exciting music, and it really is a broad range of all the things you can do with a symphony orchestra.
That sounds wonderful. Again, it sounds like you have a very, very exciting evening in store for all of those in Central Iowa who get to the concert on December 7th at 7:30 at the Ames City Auditorium.
Yes, indeed. I hope to see everybody there.
Thank you so much. Goodbye, Eric.
Was Eric McIntyre describing why he chose the music for the Central Iowa Symphony's next concert, Stories and Pictures. Well, we've already heard the intro to the Pictures of an Exhibition, the traditional symphony, so now we have Patrick Dieterman here to tell us about The Composer Is Dead. Here's Patrick. Thank you for coming in today. Tell us all about your experience as the narrator.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Now, tell us about the performance and what you expect to have happen as the narrator on the concert night. What's going to happen?
Yeah, you've heard from Eric in how the piece is a story about how the composer is found dead, and the circumstances of his demise are somewhat suspicious. So they bring in an investigator, and the investigator goes through the entire orchestra and trying to find who is the culprit, who is the murderer or murderers. And so it is kind of educational and inquisitive as it goes section by section, looking at all the different instruments.
So your narration ties that all together, mm-hmm. and takes everybody through this sort of investigative process. Now, are you static and standing on stage, or are you moving through the orchestra?
Yes, for this I'll be static on the stage. It'll be it is a large orchestra, so it would be a little difficult for me to navigate between
you
all of those
people. You might trip over a music stand and have it embarrass everybody.
You know, if that happens, it might just be a little extra drama to the performance.
That's right. And so you're having fun with this. And how did you get involved in this project?
So I have been involved with Ames Community Theater for the last year, a little more than a year or so. And through that, when Central Iowa Symphony reached out to actors, which is Ames Community Theater, for anyone who might be good for this role, my name came up. And then in a conversation with Eric, you know, we eventually got to the point where I was going to do the narration after talking about what it would all involve. And I'm very excited to be able to participate.
Well, I can identify with that because I've narrated films for public television. And narration is very important. Your voice inflection, how you tie things together, the mood you create. It's kind of underrated as a role. So I think very important things are going to happen in the way you handle yourself at the concert and how you create the mood and how you tie this all together. Because whoever put this together, I think was kind of ingenious, you know, because I think of, well, as a boy, we all knew Peter and the Wolf, you know, which is really the ultimate thing when you're a young person growing up. Every animal, every character in Peter and the Wolf had its own instrumentation, you know. And so whenever you tell a story on stage, it's done musically, but think of Peter and the Wolf without narration. That would be hollow. So make no mistake about it. Your contribution is important in this. And how's rehearsal going?
It is going very well. I'm very excited for the concert on Saturday. I think it is going to be something everyone is going to enjoy. I very much have enjoyed the work I've been doing with them for the last several rehearsals, and then finishing out this week working with them as well. I think it's going to be a great concert.
Well, you have to be very familiar with the music, don't you?
I do, and I have to be very comfortable with working with Eric. Luckily, I am a musician in my past as well, so working in that setting is not something new for me. Reading a score of music is not something new, so it worked out very well that I was in this position.
So he doesn't have to cue you every moment.
Oh, he does.
You can go with the flow.
No. You kind of can consider the narrator as just another piece of the orchestra as well. You know, I'm still paying attention to Eric, and I still get my cues, but I'm also, you know, a bit self-sufficient and am working on my, have to be paying attention so I'm not falling behind either.
Are you using a particular voice or accent or anything like that?
Well, that's the fun part because I have the narrator voice, but then I also have my inspector voice because I play, you know, the inspector, and then I also play each of the different instruments.
Well, see, throughout. Now you've given me a new dimension of your role.
Mm-hmm.
You're using various voices and characterizations, so
yes.
That's going to be more of a challenge but also more of a creative opportunity for you.
Yes, it's what was very exciting about the role is that, you know, I do have the opportunity to be not just a narrator guiding the audience through
a story. This could be the beginning of a new career. I don't have to tell you that voiceovers in Hollywood, highly paid. So remember, you might mention again what time the concert is and where.
The concert is this Saturday, December 7th at AIM City Auditorium, 7:30 p.m. You can get tickets at cisymphony.org. And everyone should attend.
Well, Patrick Dieterman, thank you for being in. And he's the narrator and character of the drama and also the concert. And we'll look forward to that. And after he's famous in Hollywood, we'll remember his debut as a voice person with this symphony performance. Good luck and enjoy Hollywood. It's kind of a high-pressure environment, but this is what's going to happen. Someone's going to hear you and give you a big break.
Well, if that happens, you know, I'm going to enjoy my time here in Ames, and we'll see what happens.
Well, don't forget the little people.
Okay? Of course not.
Central Iowa Symphony is one of the unexpected gems of Central Iowa, and KHOI brings their concerts to the airwaves thanks to the highly skilled recordings made by Eric Weber. We take pride in broadcasting these concerts as well as providing our listeners a chance to hear the stories behind these very special concerts. But these gifts to the community depend on you, the listeners. We're drawing closer to our $25,000 goal for this fund drive. We hope we can wrap it up before Christmas. We know that you always have extra expenses for the holidays, so why not consider becoming a sustaining member and contributing as little as $5 a month throughout the year for a basic membership. You can look at your options by going online at khoifm.org and click Become a Member or come down to the studio at 410 Douglas to tell us you want to join us.
KHOI depends on support from listeners. And like any broadcasting facility, public radio or anything you can name, we really have the opportunity as well as the responsibility to reach out to those of you who are out there listening, who appreciate our station and what we do, and become a member, contribute, and become involved in a way that is meaningful to you. So this is our fund drive. We're approaching the $25,000 mark, and I think everyone should have an opportunity to hit that donate button. You go to our website at khoifm.org. And you can hit the donate button or the become a member button and help us to survive as a radio station. KHOI is such a resource for our community, and we're proud of what we do here. And we're proud of the opportunity we have to promote not only things going on in Ames, but also surrounding communities. And Susan, you and I have traveled far and wide to all kinds of festivals. We promoted theater and all kinds of events in the Central Iowa area. And we've gotten to know a lot of people, haven't we? It's been interesting.
Yes, we have. And particularly, I enjoy the people that I meet through the community theaters.
We've got so many community theaters. Just listing some we've been to. Judge Story Theatrical Troupe in Story City, Webster City Community Theater, Ankeny Community Theater, the Story Theater Company here in Ames, and Boone Community Theater. And they're opening showing of Harvey tomorrow night, December 5th. We have the director, Susan Herrick, here on the phone. And Susan, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Well, I love Harvey. I'm so glad you're doing this show. And we all remember Jim Stewart doing the movie, Harvey. So tell me about your production.
Well, our production starts tomorrow night, so we've been in the midst of dress rehearsals all this week, busy, busy week. And I'm just thrilled to say that our production is going to be top-notch, and I think people will really enjoy it.
Well, now everyone, I hope, knows about Harvey, the play. Of course, it was a movie, as I said, by James Stewart. Tell us a little bit about this weird character, Harvey.
Well, Harvey is probably the least interesting character on that stage. Elwood P. Dowd is the gentleman to whom Harvey has introduced himself. And Harvey is a 6-foot-1.5-inch white rabbit who just happens to be invisible. And the only person at the outset that seems to have seen him or known about him is Elwood P. Dowd, who is a 45-year-old gentleman who is a very unique guy. And as he's helping one of his inebriated friends into a cab one night, someone behind him says, "Good evening, Mr. Dowd," and he turns around and hears this giant white rabbit, Harvey, and they strike up conversation and then a friendship. And this is all wonderful for Elwood P. Dowd, but not so great for his sister and his niece who live with him and are embarrassed beyond belief by this uncle and brother who sees an imaginary rabbit and is not at all shy about introducing him to people who obviously can't see him and don't understand what they're seeing and not seeing. And
So everyone around Elwood P. Dowd thinks that he's probably a little crazy, don't they?
Yeah, a little nuts, I think so, yeah. And so Vita Louise Simmons, his sister, decides that she would like to have him put in a local sanitarium.
Well, it's a delightful show, and this is dinner theater, right?
It will be dinner theater on Friday and Saturday of this week. The rest of the time, people will be able to just walk into the DMAC auditorium and see the show.
Well, I bet you had a tremendous response. And this is the Boone Community Theater presenting Harvey. And give us our times and dates again, please, Susan.
Sure. It'll be 7 o'clock each evening. The show itself will go on stage at 7 on December 5, 6, 7. That's this Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And the following Thursday, Friday, which I think is the 12th and 13th. So we'll be on stage 5 nights. As maybe your listeners don't know, we lost our home, and so we've been on the road for a year or so here to put our shows onto whatever stages that we can beg, borrow, or steal. DMAC has been just very gracious to allow us to be back on their proscenium stage with Harvey. The very first shows that I did with Boone Community Theater, I did at DMAC, and so I'm familiar with the stage. It's a great auditorium. The acoustics are wonderful. I think people will be very happy with their seating and what they can hear and see there.
Susan, that sounds great. Susan Herrick with Boone Community Theater, their production of Harvey coming up, dinner theater, and regular Presidium stage seating also. And thank you, Susan, and good luck. Break a leg.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. Other voices you heard were Henry Corbin, Sunny Camp, Emma Christensen, Eric McIntyre, Patrick Dieterman, and Susan Herrick.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m., and you can also listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, KHOIFM.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Paul Hertz. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, scored by Ravel, performed by Boston Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Herbert Mondkarian.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to join the team as a reporter, just contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org, and that's also where you need to go to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Do it today. Just look for the yellow Donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.